Okay, welcome to the afternoon session of this fifth meeting in Legal Philosophy, Oxford, Genoa, Girona. Now, with the presentation of Jorge Vaquerizo from the University of Girona about the topic on the limits of constitutional amendments. 13 minutes for you.
Thank you, Jordi. Good afternoon to all. I am really glad of being here and also grateful to have this opportunity. Well, to begin with, I want to summarize what I'm going to talk about. I am developing a research on constitutional changes that affect rigid constitutions, that is, written constitutions which cannot be amended in the same way that ordinary legislation because of the lengthier or more complex process for their amendment. Regarding this subject, I will proceed as follows. First, I will outline what kind of problems can exist when determining the limits of constitutional amendments. Second, I will sketch the disagreements between two different conceptions of the Constitution and their impact on determining those limits. Third, I will defend the idea that it is necessary to introduce two relevant dimensions of the Constitution in the analysis about the limits of constitutional amendments. Fourth, I will try to show two important consequences derived from this particular analysis. And last, I will present a distinction for determining the limits between constitutional amendment powers and constituent power. So let's go in parts, like the Jagger Report said. In constitutional states governed by rigid constitutions, it is not an uncommon practice to change specific parts of a constitution without breaking the legal order. In the same way that a person does not lose his or her identity whenever an amputation or transplantation occurs, it is accepted that a constitution can be legally amended without losing its identity. For this to happen, of course, it is necessary to know if a certain constitutional amendment is legally suitable. Therefore, it is necessary to know the limits of constitutional amendment powers. But this query is often problematic. Determining if a constitutional amendment is in accordance with the law or against it is usually an arguable matter on which jurists and legal scholars tend to disagree. Certain constitutional changes, which are perfectly permitted for some, are clearly forbidden according to many others. For example, in the recent constitutional referendum that was held in Italy last December, voters were asked whether they approved of a constitutional law that amended 47 articles of the Italian Constitution. In the opinion of a large number of constitutional law professors in Italy, the aforementioned bill intended to amend the Constitution without distorting it. But according to an important group of philosophy of law professors, the Parliament was taking for itself an inappropriate constituent role that put at risk the heritage of contemporary constitutionalism. Some of these disagreements are interpretive ones, since it is not uncommon that different interpreters can ascribe different meanings to specific provisions related with constitutional amendments. For instance, the Italian Constitution declares that the republican form shall not be a matter for constitutional amendment. Some legal scholars, using either a systematic or extensive interpretation method, have claimed that this prohibition includes the democratic form. Consequently, it would also be illegal to amend the democratic form of a state. However, according to other legal thinkers, this implicit limit does not exist. They argue that if the framers of a constitution had intended to forbid the amendment of the democratic form, they would have made it explicit. In any case, these disagreements about constitutional amendments are not only interpretive ones. A good number of them are conceptual. That is, they are largely based on different concepts of the Constitution implicitly assumed. As is well known, Constitution is a term that can be used with more than one meaning within the legal field. As a necessary consequence, each of these meanings predetermine the limits between the law-abiding constitutional amendments and the extraordinary or illegal ones. This is so because the parameters for determining what can be legally amended within the Constitution rely on how its identity is defined, that is, rely on the set of properties chosen for the concept of Constitution. Put simply, if the underlying conception of the Constitution is different, the stance of the limits of constitutional amendments will be different too. To show this point, it is not necessary to address all the different concepts of the Constitution and their implications on this subject. Since this is a short presentation, I think it would be enough to present a broad opposition between a formal conception and a substantive conception of a constitution. In doing so, I will follow closely the characterizations made by Professor Ricardo Guastini in several of his works. In a substantive conception, it is assumed that the Constitution is a coherent and cohesive ensemble of ethical, political principles and values. More accurately, the Constitution is understood as an axiologically structured system of norms composed by, on the one hand, marginal norms, and on the other hand, fundamental or supreme principles that build up the axiological identity of the Constitution. If this perspective is adopted, those supreme principles operate as logical limits, which cannot be amended. They are unamendable. They are considered logical or conceptual limits because they derive from the concept of constitutional amendment itself. Therefore, a constitutional amendment can modify everything but the identity of the Constitution. Otherwise, it would not be just an amendment. Hence, even if they were not written in the constitutional text, those limits are considered intrinsic to any constitution, regardless of their content or interpretation. It follows that the axiological identity of the constitution under this conception could never be modified in legal ways. That could only happen in illegal or revolutionary ways. Starting from these premises, for this substantive conception, every marginal modification that does not alter the axiological identity of the Constitution is a regular exercise of the constitutional amendment powers. Although, if a certain modification distorts the supreme principles of the Constitution or subverts the ethical political values that configure its substantive or axiological identity, perverting its spirit, then such modification, even if formally legal, for example, under the guise of a so-called constitutional amendment formally executed, could not be a genuine constitutional amendment. It would be the establishing of a different constitution which would give rise to a new legal order explainable in terms of the constituent power. Regarding this substantive conception of the constitution and constitutional amendments, there are plenty of critical approaches. It is not my purpose to concentrate on this, so I will just mention some of them. It has been reproached that the axiological identity of the Constitution is nothing more than a doctrinal or dogmatic construction overlapping the constitutional text. It has been questioned whether the Constitution could contain or imply supreme principles hierarchically superior to the constitutional provisions themselves. It has been pointed out that determining which constitutional norms are fundamental or supreme and which are not depends on subjective value judgments, and the very idea of logical limits to constitutional amendments has been subject to criticism. On the other hand, the opposite perspective, the formal conception, assumes a neutral, non-evaluative concept of the Constitution without any regard for its normative content. In this view, the Constitution is just a set of norms which can be identified in extensional way, as Eugenio Bulygin proposed. Hence, the Constitution can be understood as a set of articles that are part of it from the first to the last one. So, if the Constitution is conceived in this sense, it loses its identity and turns into another set whenever a new element is inserted or every time an existing element is deleted or replaced. This is so because, in line with elementary notions of the set theory, every modification of a set results in a different set, because the elements that compose it are different. In other words, for this formal conception, the elements that compose any element, when any article of the constitution is added, substituted, or eliminated, the constitution loses its identity and results in a different constitution, regardless of how marginal or unimportant may that modification be from the axiological point of view. As a consequence, from this neutral perspective, the conceptual of constitutional amendments and establishment of a new constitution are totally overlapped. They are simply indistinguishable. But according to Professor Guastini, this doesn't mean that the two concepts cannot be distinguished. In his opinion, constitutional amendments and establishment of a new constitution should be distinguished on the basis of purely formal elements. In other words, for Guastini, the distinction has to be found in the forms of exercise of a power and not in the content of the respective norm-producing acts. On this basis, Professor Guastini formulates two theses in order to propose a formal distinction. Thesis number one: any constitutional modification performed in legal forms, according to the forms provided by the Constitution itself, no matter how profoundly could the Constitution be affected, is just an exercise of constitutional amendment powers. And, symmetrically, thesis number two: any constitutional modification carried out in illegal forms, however marginal the modification may be, even if considered politically trivial, amounts to establishing a new constitution. In sum, for this formal distinction, the legal modification of the constitution through the constitutional amendment powers is an exercise of a constituted power, whereas its illegal change is an expression of constituent power, which means that from this perspective, it does not make any sense to talk about logical limits of the constitutional amendments. This also grounds a relevant conclusion. The Constitution, from this point of view, can be deeply modified in legal ways without revolutions or civil wars. Note that this claim is exactly the opposite of the substantive conception. For a purely formal conception, it doesn't matter if the constitutional change is deep or superficial, as long as it follows the formal procedures for the amendment. On the contrary, for a substantive conception, it is not possible to consider a profound constitutional change merely as an amendment. Only superficial changes are considered in this category. At this point, it is possible to observe the relevance of the conceptual assumptions and their impact on determining the limits of constitutional amendments. However, there are some aspects of this problem which I consider worthy to discuss and complement. First of all, I think it's very important to distinguish two relevant dimensions of the Constitution regarding this matter: as an object to be amended, and as a regulative guide to produce an amendment. In doing so, I will refer to the classic conceptual distinction between legal provisions and legal rules, that is, between normative sentences and their meanings. On the one hand, as an object to be amended, it is important to consider that whenever a constitutional amendment is to be performed, the object to be modified is the constitutional text, that is, the set of normative sentences that compose a written constitution. This assertion is based on the following facts. Number one, when the constitutional provisions regulate the amendment of the constitution itself, the regulation lies in the norm-producing acts which introduce, repeal, or substitute legal provisions within the written constitution. Number two, the norm-producing acts which dispose a constitutional amendment always refer to the text, like the article X is hereby repealed, or the article B is now substituted with the following article C, etc. This is so by definition. A norm-producing act is a speech act which creates legal provisions. And number three, the modification of constitutional rules, that is, the modification of the meanings ascribed to the constitutional text, is a different phenomenon related to constitutional interpretation, not to constitutional production. In other words, when we talk about constitutional amendments, it is obvious that we are not talking about modificatory constitutional interpretation. We are talking about the change of the constitutional text. On the other hand, as a regulative guide to produce an amendment, we have to take into account that, of course, not every change in the constitutional text implies a constitutional amendment, since only legal modifications count as that. But what kind of constitutional changes are considered legal? The answer to this question seems to be evident. Legal constitutional changes will be those which comply with the relevant constitutional provisions regarding the specific amendment. The problem with this answer is that constitutional provisions within a written constitution are often drafted in ambiguous, vague, or open-textured terms and phrases. Because of these grounds of the indeterminacy, commonly observed by legal scholars, it is very usual to stress that constitutional provisions can lead to different and incompatible interpretations, which, moreover, change from time to time. If this is acknowledged, the answer for the previous questions cannot be found in the constitutional text, but in the constitutional meaning. It depends on the operative interpretations of those constitutional provisions. In other words, it depends on the constitutional rules in force which regulate the constitutional amendments. Assuming an empiricist ontology of law, for constitutional rules in force, I understand the norms actually applied, that is, actually used in deciding cases by supreme constitutional organs. In a nutshell, the Constitution could be understood in two relevant senses regarding the subject matter: as a set of legal provisions which can be modified by concrete constitutional amendments, that is, as an object to be amended, and as a set of legal rules in force which determine what is the meaning for legal change of the constitutional text. In other words, as a regulative guide to produce an amendment. As can be seen, the introduction of these two dimensions of the Constitution in this analysis allow us to take into account what could the meaning of legal or illegal constitutional amendments be, something that cannot be explained just by means of an extensional definition of the constitutional text. This provides, I think, a more comprehensive platform for understanding the constitutional amendments phenomenon. However, to introduce this modest complement also entails two consequences which I would like to detail. The first consequence is that the difference between the substantive conception and the formal conception on the limits of constitutional amendments does not lie only in a different concept of the Constitution. Both conceptions could agree that the Constitution, taken as an object to be amended, may be understood as a set of legal provisions. And both conceptions could agree that the Constitution, taken as a regulative guide to produce an amendment, may be understood as a set of legal rules in force. Notwithstanding, for the formal conception, the limits of constitutional amendments are legal rules inferred just from the constitutional text, while for the substantive conception, those legal rules are derived either from the written document called Constitution or from a framework of supreme principles and/or fundamental values of constitutional nature which, from this point of view, exist previously and independently of the constitutional text. This is so because the substantive conception, or at least the substantive conception here presented, assumes that the law is defined by a system of principles and values knowable, among other ways, through an epistemology related to evaluative objectivism. Whereas the formal conception, or at least one formal conception which adopts a realistic and analytic view on law and legal cognition, assumes that the law is defined ultimately by a set of empirically perceptible social facts. The difference between these two conceptions, therefore, lies in a different understanding of what kind of entity or set of entities the law is. The second consequence is the following. If the meaning of legal or illegal regarding constitutional amendments can only be determined consulting the constitutional rules in force, then it's perfectly possible that certain constitutional rules in force within a given legal order can regulate not only formal aspects of amendments, but substantive ones as well. In other words, there is no need to distinguish constitutional amendments and the establishment of a new constitution just on the basis of purely formal elements, since it is conceptually possible to find constitutional rules in force regulating not only the forms of exercise of the amendment powers, that is, not only the competence and the procedures, but furthermore, the content of the respective norm-producing acts. In this sense, many constitutional texts around the world contain explicit provisions which put limits on the content of eventual amendments. These kinds of provisions are commonly known as entrenchment clauses. For example, the French Constitution also states that the Republican form shall not be a matter for constitutional amendment. And in Germany, the Basic Law explicitly prohibits any modification that could affect the human rights or the human dignity, among other matters. Obviously, the existence of this kind of constitutional clauses is contingent. Some constitutions include them and some others do not, like the Spanish Constitution, for example, which does not impose material limits for its amendment. But as long as the supreme constitutional organs of a given legal order understand those explicit provisions as material limits for amending the constitution, there will be constitutional rules in force requiring the content analysis of the respective acts of amendment. Nevertheless, some authors consider that these entrenchment clauses are only relative limits to constitutional amendments, since they forbid the amendment of other provisions but not the amendment for of themselves. For instance, Article 89 of the French Constitution declares the Republican form of government shall not be the object of any amendment, which implies that at least Article 1 of that Constitution is not amendable. But it says nothing about the amendment of Article 89 itself. This case is very common, but it raises a difficult question. Do the entrenchment clauses include an implicit prohibition for amending themselves? For those who answer no, it is possible to repeal an entrenchment clause and then, in turn, or even simultaneously, to modify in any sense the constitutional articles no longer protected against an amendment. In this sense, some consider that such entrenchment is relative because it would always be defeasible. But even if we admit this possibility, that in the end all the constitutional provisions can be amended, it doesn't mean that material limits entailed by entrenchment clauses do not exist during all the time prior to the eventual repealing. In other words, if the material limits are constitutional rules in force, it is not possible to deny their binding effect and their normative guidance to produce a constitutional amendment as long as those rules are maintained. Likewise, many constitutional jurisdictions, through legal interpretation or legal construction, establish unexpressed material limits to constitutional amendments. For example, the Italian Constitutional Court identifies the inalienable rights of the human being in such category. Even though their constitutional text does not say anything about the prohibition of reforming those rights, they are considered non-amendable. These unexpressed limits, by the way, are not necessarily inferred or constructed from substantive constitutional provisions. In some cases, they are derived from constitutional provisions about formal aspects like competence or amending procedures. For instance, the Colombian Constitution establishes the competence to control constitutional amendments exclusively for procedural errors in their formation. Nonetheless, the Colombian Constitutional Court has interpreted that such competence includes the unexpressed power to review whether a specific amendment is only modifying rather than replacing the Constitution, which implies, in the opinion of that court, the competence to review the content of constitutional amendments. In any case, these unexpressed material limits are also contingent. Some constitutional jurisdictions have stipulated them, some others have not. And again, this is the case of Spain. But as long as the supreme constitutional organs of a given legal order understand that there are implicit material limits for amending the constitution, there will be constitutional rules in force for requiring the content analysis of the respective acts of amendment. Well then, if any of these material limits are actually part of the constitution, understood as a set of legal rules in force, then a purely formal distinction between constitutional amendments and the establishment of a new constitution cannot be possible. Whichever the type of material limit may be, expressed or unexpressed, it doesn't matter, its effective application by supreme constitutional organs is enough to claim that it is a part of the law in force. As a consequence, every attempt to amend the Constitution has to observe the eventual material limits if it wants to be qualified as a legal one. In these circumstances, of course, it would not be sufficient to examine the form of the normative act that attempts to amend the Constitution. Its content should also to be examined in order to determine whether the material limits in force are being observed or not. If not, such modification, even if performed in legal forms, could not be legally qualified as an exercise of constitutional amendment powers. As it can be seen from an empiricist ontology of law, it is not necessary to use a purely formal distinction between constitutional amendment powers and constituent power. This is so because it is not incoherent to maintain a realistic concept of the Constitution understood both as a set of legal provisions and as a set of legal rules in force for each relevant purpose, while acknowledging the existence of eventual material limits in force for constitutional amendments, that is, while taking into account that those material limits could be part of the generally accepted and leading interpretations and constructions within a given legal order. On this basis, I would like to offer a different distinction. It is very simple, and it consists in reformulating the terms of Ricardo Guastini's thesis number 1 and number 2 in order to make room for any type of limits for constitutional amendments expressed by constitutional rules in force. In this sense, thesis number 1, any constitutional modification performed with the guidance of any type of conditions imposed by constitutional rules in force, no matter how profoundly could the Constitution be affected, is an exercise of constitutional amendment powers. And symmetrically, thesis number 2, any constitutional modification carried out in breach of any type of conditions imposed by constitutional rules in force, however marginal the modification may be, does not constitute an exercise of constitutional amendment powers. It would be either an unconstitutional action when the modification has not been accepted and therefore has been repealed in the regular ways, or, number 2, an expression of constituent power when the illegal modification has been established de facto within a given political community, in which case the broken constitutional rules are no longer in force. They are now part of the preceding constitution since the breakdown provokes the extraordinary or illegal establishment of a new constitution. This distinction entails the two dimensions of the constitution previously commented, as an object to be amended and as a regulative guide to produce an amendment, which means that the constitution is understood as a set of legal rules in force which determine, among other things, what is the identity of the Constitution, or more precisely, what cannot be changed without causing the establishment of a new Constitution. In this sense, this distinction has a very modest ambition, which is to take into account the fact that supreme constitutional organs, like constitutional courts, when issuing last resort decisions which cannot be revoked, can ascribe a plurality of meanings of one and the same text, including the construction of any type of limits for constitutional amendments. This doesn't imply that the decisions of supreme constitutional organs are infallible, nor defending something like a duty to obey the judicial law, neither any compromise with substantive criteria for identifying the Constitution. It only intends to point out the different types of norms established by the supreme organs to evaluate constitutional amendments, given the fact that they are usually have the last word in the functioning of contemporary constitutional states. Thank you very much.